Isle of Man's largest collection of locally produced podcasts, available for free on maxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. Open line today, so whatever you'd like to talk about, then you can call 66 13 68. Well, the island was alive yesterday. Media from here, there and everywhere. And, of course, Max Radio broadcasting the closer stage of the assisted dying bill yesterday. Although the BBC were a bit preoccupied, they thought we were about to enact it all, but never mind. Interesting how the BBC from across kept referring to MPs on the Isle of Man. Never mind. MHKs voted against an amendment to the assisted dying bill to have assisted dying delivered by a charitable organisation instead of Manx Care. An attempt to have that has been defeated. Glenn Faber and Peel MHK, Kate Law Brennan, wanted to add a clause to the assisted dying bill that would have prevented staff employed by Manx Care from being able to provide assisted dying services. So, I don't know whether you were at the debate yesterday or at the clauses stage, whether you were inside in the public gallery, which was fairly packed, or outside. There were a couple of opposing demonstrations outside Keys yesterday. But any thoughts on this and where we go from it? The fact that the Mayor, Member for Arran Michael, Mr. Canham, will be introducing an amendment, a private member's amendment, to introduce a referendum, and he seemed unequivocal about it yesterday when interviewed. The fact that this needs to go before the public, whether it's at the same time as an election, and if it is at the same time as the election, that's going to be September 2026, two and a bit years away. I'm in Warsaw in Poland at the moment, 22 degrees and good sunshine, but I'm missing the forests and the river and the mountains of the Isle of Man. We shouldn't take the Isle of Man for granted. Great place. Ex-Laxey resident, Big John, that is. Thank you, John. I'm glad you're enjoying yourself in Poland. There were lots of messages that we didn't get to yesterday, and there were lots of messages, so we'll try and get to some of those. But any thoughts on this? Thanks also to Tim, who dropped a note in and just said, am I right in saying we can't park at the TT grandstand this year? My 80-year-old father can't walk around the paddock without having to walk that far from the new car park. The new car park is St. George's football ground. Timo, I'm sorry about that, but they've apparently said now, I think Douglas Council, the City Council now, were never too happy about everybody parking on there, so it's now been shifted. There will be some car parking. I think perhaps disabled car parking may be there where it used to be, but the new car park is up and past police headquarters, turn right onto St. George's. So that's where that is. So, the bid to keep assisted dying services away from Manx Care has been defeated. I just wonder what you make of this. What we haven't yet heard that much from Manx Care about how this possible assisted dying legislation will affect them, and also recruitment of personnel. Would you want Manx Care, the arm's length, day-to-day operations arm of the Department of Health and Social Care? Do you think Manx Care should administer this? It's all hypothetical, of course. Kate Law Brennan said the bill isn't fit for purpose, not safe, and those advocating for it need to put a lot more work into it and start explaining things if they're so set in their beliefs, said Kate Law Brennan. Do you think if this happens, it should be Manx Care? Should it be a charity? Should it be a commercial organisation who possibly does it? Who would do this.
Assisted dying is deeply dangerous for us in healthcare, not only because it would need to be a specialised service that should not be mainstreamed or mainlined, but because we have been told repeatedly by medical professionals that it will impact on what we like to phrase recruitment and retention in HR speak. What we really mean is whether medical professionals would want to come and work on the Isle of Man.
What do you think? If you are a medical professional, I do accept if you want to stay anonymous, by all means do, but if you are a medical professional, does this affect the reputation of the Isle of Man? And if it does affect it, again, would it be a negative reflection or perhaps a progressive positive reflection? Opinion is divided both ways, but if you have a thought on what could happen with this, by all means, get in touch. Vivian's on now. Hello, Vivian.
Hello, Andy. Did you see all the publicity the Isle of Man got last night?
I did, yes. Everybody was looking at the Isle of Man yesterday.
It was very good. But also, did you see the programme on BBC at 9 o'clock? It was Clarice, I can't remember her name. She's in a wheelchair. She used to be in Silent Witness. And she did a whole programme on assisted dying. And
it was Liz Carr, I think, wasn't it, last night?
Is that her name? I don't know. I only know her. She's in a wheelchair.
Right, OK. It was a Liz Carr documentary. I didn't see it. In fact, I've got it recorded.
Well, it was very, very good. And it really made you stop and think about what it was all about. And she was being interviewed by various people. And one was a doctor that was very much, who was in a wheelchair, who was very much into the assisted dying. So,
Vivian, may I ask you, what's your opinion?
I don't know. I mean, at my age, it makes you stop and think. I'm 80, and I just think, now, I want to carry on with life. I don't want to have to stop and think about whether I want to be killed off or not.
I mean, have you changed your mind, or have you always been in two minds about it?
I think I've always been in two minds about it. I watched my mother die in a nursing home, but there wasn't anything else we could do about that. But it does, it really, if you watch these programmes, and I don't normally watch them all, I'm being honest, it does make you stop and think a great deal about the future.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll make a sweeping generalisation, Vivian. I think most people are in two minds about this, and because it only affects you when it personally affects you, or if you have first-hand experience of this, and I just wonder what it would do to the Isle of Man's image abroad.
That also worries me, and I would hate to think that we became an island that had assisted dying and people came here. I know they can't because there's too many rules going to be there, but it does worry me that people might think they could come here to have the assisted dying.
OK, well, Vivian, I appreciate you calling today. Thanks for that.
But as I say, if you didn't see the programme and you've got a chance to see it, it was very, very good.
OK, thanks, Vivian.
Thanks, bye.
Goodbye. It's 16 minutes past 12. It is a divisive subject. Lots of people have opinions firmly one way and lots of people have opinions firmly the other way. But aside of that, if you can detach that, what do you think it would do to the Isle of Man's reputation abroad if we became known as that first place in the British Isles for this to happen? And whether or not people would get hold of the wrong end of the stick and pitch up and take temporary residence here and want it. maybe some people wouldn't quite understand the nuances that we understand. And look how long we've been talking about this. So, yeah, that Liz Carr documentary was on BBC One last night, says John in Farmville. Frightening, especially the incident in Canada, which shows how dangerous it can be. Tony said, I'm flabbergasted. If I get terminally ill, I'll decide if I take my life. I think do-gooding politicians jumping on the bandwagon. I thought doctors were there to relieve suffering. Let's get the bill passed. And also, I have a son with a disability. I wouldn't dream of ending his life, says Tony. Thanks for that. You can still park at the grandstand in TT if you have a blue badge, says S in Onken. So I hope that will satisfy our listener in France today. You text, you email, you call, and you WhatsApp, and assisted dying should be opened up to anybody who wants it. Why shouldn't I have the right, having been through the appropriate counselling, to have the right to end my life? It's purely a personal decision, says 653. There should be no religious beliefs brought into the argument whatsoever. Well, it is interesting, because I've been doing some research into the religious aspect of this, and there are religious stances in favour of assisted dying, and there are also religions who are firmly against it. And at the front, not a religion, but of course you have the Hippocratic Oath. Some doctors state that a physician-assisted suicide is contrary to the Hippocratic Oath. And various religions have preservation of life as one of the greatest values in their religion. The Mormons, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is against assisted suicide. And anybody who takes part is either regarded as having violated the commandments of God. That's the Mormons. So, let's get on with it then. Julie's here. Hello, Julie.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to make... I was going to call you yesterday, but unfortunately I ran out of time. Our Chief Minister, when you did the interview with him about that he wants a referendum,
yes,
for assisted dying, and he, as you have just done there, called it assisted suicide, which I think there's a little bit of politicalness going on in the fact that this week is Mental Health Week. You know, so it's a little bit raw at the moment, you know, with people who are suffering from mental health. And I think, you know, that putting it together, yeah, with the assisted dying is wrong, you know, is politically...
Unfortunately, there's no middle ground, because some people say assisted suicide, some people say assisted dying, some people call it euthanasia, as you say.
Yeah, I have called it euthanasia.
Each one of those terms is loaded. And let me point out, the Chief Minister isn't doing it as Chief Minister, he's doing it as a member, the member for Ayr and Michael.
He is, absolutely. But, I mean, he of all people should know that the bill is called assisted dying, not assisted suicide. I call it euthanasia. You know, it is. If I took my dog to the vet, you know, they were going to be euthanized. You know, so... But that was not the reason why I called. I think we need to also look at this at a different way, because I've been quite horrified listening to some of the comments, you know, over the last few months of, you know, taking granny because we want her inheritance, which is a whole different dilemma in, is that how we see people nowadays? You know, I mean, I personally, I will look after somebody who is ill until they take their dying breath. But there seems to be a whole angle of pushing this that, you know, oh, I want my grandma's inheritance, you know, so let's coerce her into going and being put to sleep so that we can claim, you know. I mean, have we really reached a level of that, you know, in our society that people believe that people are going to push people to go and be euthanized? You know, that's quite worrying. But the other side that I wanted people to start thinking about is, because this all seems to be targeted at the elderly people, or the have been, you know, people with disabilities and all of the rest of it. So I want people to think about a scenario where I'm a 60-year-old mother. I'm not, but I don't want anybody to think I'm talking about anybody specific. And I have a 40-year-old child who was diagnosed with cancer, and they have done the chemo, they've done the cutting out, they've done all of the bits and pieces, and they've now reached a stage where they have told that child, there is nothing more we can do for you. You are going to die. As a mother, as soon as that child has been born, our main role in life is to protect that child, take away the pain of that child, do everything we possibly can to help that child. And we have now, we're making a decision, you know, as to whether we can end that child's life because there is no coming back from it. And they don't want to. They're begging you to help. Mom, please help me do something. Mom, I can't cope with the pain anymore. You know, Mom, I'm having, you know, I've got no control over my bowel movements, you know, and things like that. And you know that this could go on for 3 months, because prior to getting cancer, they'd been healthy, they weren't drinkers, they weren't smokers, they went out on their bicycle, you know, sort of keeping fit, they went to the gym 3 times a week. They were happy, healthy adults, and a horrible disease has taken a grip of them. And as a mother, you've now got to sit there for 3 months whilst they die a slow and extremely painful death. Is that right?
I'm not going to express an opinion, you know that, but...
No, I know.
This is, I mean, I'm glad you put that out in front, because this is so subjective, Julie. Every case is so different. And until you experience something like that, until you get into that and live your life in that way, it doesn't occur to you.
Yeah.
You may be expressing emotions you didn't even know you had.
Absolutely. And this is also where I have a very good friend who is Dutch, and he has been to end of life parties, you know, where young people, we're not talking about, you know, sort of 80 odd, 90 odd year old people. We're talking about people, you know, my age, you know, in their mid 50s, who have been diagnosed with a terminal illness, and they have chosen that they do not want it dragging out anymore. So they've gathered their friends together, they've said their final goodbyes, and then they walk out to another room, the doctor goes in, the doctor, you know, administers, you know, the end of life, and they know they're no longer in pain anymore. But I think we're becoming too focused on that this is all about getting rid of our older people. You know, I mean, I wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for older people. You know, I'd think they're brilliant, and the wisdom, you know, and all of the rest of it. But I have had some of them even beg, you know, to please help me, you know, sort of end this. I don't want to go on anymore, because of the pain. Generally, it's usually pain that, you know, that hits people.
So, Julie, but what conclusion have you come to?
Well, I think that we need to, that our government need to grow a spine, and we need to be, you know, the first to do this. However, I do also think that people of my age and younger, this may not affect the 70, 80 year olds now. You know, they may bypass all of this. But if somebody, you know, sort of our age, we need to be telling our families now and having a written document to say, if I get to the stage, you know, where I only have, you know, 6 months to live, or, you know, that my life becomes unbearable, I am telling you now that I am choosing not to be, you know, sort of stuck in a hospital bed for possibly up to 3 months, maybe even longer, having, you know, being catheterized, you know, wearing nappies, having, you know, pain injections, and not even knowing where I am. I'm choosing that now, not, you know, when I'm 70 and things start happening. I think we need to get more into the set it up now, rather than looking at it, you know, as a reaction to an incident that takes place.
So your message to the members of the House of Keys?
Oh, I've sent them all messages. Oh, is right. Get it signed up. Yeah, get it signed up and then set a document up that people sign up to. Like we used to do as, when, as donors, you know, you would sign up to say, if such and such happens, I do not want, you know, my life keeping, you know, keeping alive, because I think it would be very, very emotive if, you know, say my granny suddenly became, you know, sort of quite unwell, and then the decision is being made at that point. You know, the decision needs to be made by somebody who is mentally competent a long, long time before it becomes necessary.
Okay. All right. Appreciate
that,
Julie.
I think that would solve the problems. Yep. All right. Take care.
Good to hear from you. Yes, good to hear from you. And Graham's on now. Hi, Graham.
Hi. I've got a different spin on this. Now, yep. It's against the law for you to take your own life. Yet, my wife, who was perfectly healthy, she had psoriasis, and she saw this different doctor who said, I'm going to put you on this fantastic new drug. He took her bloods. He did not wait for the results to come back, waited for no results, put her on this drug, and she died in 7 weeks. The drug killed her. So, how can you say a doctor can get away with killing someone, but you can't take your own life?
It's not against the law to take your own life, though.
Yeah, but there'll be repercussions for it. So how can a doctor get away with killing someone?
Okay, all right. Well, thanks for bringing that to our attention. And Betty's on now. Thank you, Graham. Here's Betty. Hello, Betty.
Hi, Andy. I agree with the last lady who was on about everything she said, really. You asked what would other people think about the Isle of Man. And I don't think they'll think anything very much, because so many countries now have this ability to have assisted dying, but it's nothing special, really. And as far as people who have disabilities and are ill, and their relatives wanting them to go for assisted dying, well, I think that's an awful shame, but it's the relatives you need to speak to. What a dreadful thing to do. And as somebody who has nursed patients over the years in great pain, I can understand the need for it, and also who was there when my husband was dying of cancer in great pain and cried out that he wanted to die. I can well understand the need for it, and I want to have it for myself when the time comes. And I am an old person, I'm 88, and I don't want to continue and be, I'm not worried about being a burden to anybody, but I don't want anybody to have to look after me particularly. I don't want to end up in a home looking at the wall, however nice the home is. I don't want any of these things. I'd rather, to me, that is just a living death. And I'd rather die quietly and quickly with my relatives around me. I don't want to have to do it for myself, but it may come to that if it just may come to that if I can't have assisted dying.
Have you changed your mind over the years, Betty, or have you always felt this way?
I've always felt this way.
And was that because of your experience in the medical profession?
Maybe, yes, I'm not sure. But that certainly has affected the way I think.
Okay, I appreciate you calling, Betty. Thanks for that.
Thank you. Take care, Andy.
Okay.
Bye.
Good to hear from you. 29 minutes before one on Man in Line today, this assisted dying legislation and everything that was talked about yesterday in the clause estate. I don't know whether you saw the coverage, heard the coverage, and what you think this... Of course, we won't know about this until it's actually happened, or if it does or doesn't happen, because hindsight is always perfect eyesight. And we won't know. At the moment, we're in the middle of it. And one point I would put before you is, do you trust the government to make the right decision? And remember, if the government makes the decision, the legislation has to be drafted. It's got to be drafted by the legal drafts team, drafting team, and the civil service has to deal with this as well. Do you think we should wait until somebody else does it and then we adopt that? Or do you trust the government and the apparatus to get this right? Julian's on. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Yeah, it's a big question, this one, isn't it? Something that seems to be getting a bit lost in the noise, though, why are the majority of doctors against assisted dying? That's a question that I'm asking people and I'm not getting an answer to.
Is it the majority of doctors, or is it the majority of doctors that have expressed an opinion?
Well, I'll go with one of your news reports, I think, said that 34% of doctors have expressed the intention that they would consider leaving the island if they bring in assisted dying. And I think 74%. So I'll go off the Manx Radio news item. But if 34% of doctors leave the island, and we're already at, I think Dewan said it's 5 weeks before you can even get a phone appointment. Mm. What is the practicalities of this? And, you know, if people say, there's been comments on social media where they say, well, if they don't like it, they can leave the island. Or who are we going to get over to actually do this? I mean, are we going to get people who are not from the island, who don't have a bond with anyone on the island, that won't have any kind of emotional tie like you would have if you've been with the same doctor for decades?
Yeah.
Are we going to get the same thing that Theo Boer talked about in Belgium, where they ended up having euthanizing traveling doctors, where you just go in a room that you've never been in before, and the two options are you either get put on a chair and you're euthanized, or you leave?
Well, we don't know. We haven't heard from, two of the people, two of the organisations involved in this, not directly involved, but you would think would have a firm opinion, Manx Care and the Isle of Man Hospice. I think it often helps if you know some practical details, as you say, of what would happen. Would it be a state-sponsored organisation? Would it be the state? Would it be an allied organisation or a charity? Or, as you say, it may be that, I don't want to, again, this is hypothetical, that Dignitas, who operate their clinic in Basel in Switzerland, say, we'll open one on the Isle of Man.
Well, yeah, but of course, Ludwig Minnelli, who started Dignitas, who's in his 90s now, also drafted the separate human rights legislation in Switzerland. So they've always been separate from the European Union and Europe itself in many ways. So we'd have to also start changing the human rights laws as well, so that they wouldn't be in concert with the European Union. So I'm not sure if we go that far. It also brings up, I totally understand Kate Lord Brennan's point, except, of course, certain foundations love to throw money at things to exert influence. I think 86% of the funding of the WHO come from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So when you start talking about privatization, you've then got to worry about, you know, sort of amazingly high donations can get certain leverage on outcomes.
Oh, no, I mean, it's you're quite right. A lot of charities are basically the arm of a foundation.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the WHO, of course, it's only a couple of weeks away from the international health regulations being quietly amended. And as one of your previous callers said, donors, some time ago, the organ donation was switched from opt-in to opt-out. And so it is with the international health regulations. And when they start removing clauses like with respect for human dignity and human rights, and removing may to shall, you tend to worry that this is just going to quietly slip under the radar, you know, probably like the two guys that stole those cars the other night or whenever it was. You know, they kind of, you only realize afterwards, oh my God, what's happening?
I don't think this is ever going to slip under the radar, Julian.
No. Just a quick, I did watch Liz Carr last night. Very interesting. Some of the points she was making, I mean, she got that congenital disease at the age of 7, so it sort of suddenly hit her. But she made some interesting points. She said that disabled people are the toughest people out there, constantly problem-solving. She likened them to cockroaches able to survive a nuclear bomb. So they have a certain mentality where they're constantly having to problem solve. And it does make you mentally tough. She also had an interview with Lord Falconer, who's tried 4 times to present a bill for this in the UK. And I have to agree with Bonzo when he said that perhaps it's almost like the Celtic fringe almost. You've got Jersey, you've got the Isle of Man. It's almost like they're trying to get it in here so that, I think Bonzo said, so that it's easier for less discussion in Parliament. So it would be rather a shame if we're used as some sort of a test bed for this.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I appreciate it. Thanks, Julian. Good to hear from you.
All right. Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
Okay. And Karen's with us now. Hi, Karen.
Oh, hi. Hi, Andy.
What's on your mind, Karen?
Well, I'd like to put my point of view about the assisted dying bill, please.
By all means, yeah.
I am actually terminally ill. I've got a terminal diagnosis of cancer. So I think that, you know, people in my situation, our voices should really be the ones that most people are listening to.
And how, what's your opinion?
Well, my opinion is that it should be absolutely brought in, and that, you know, that there definitely needs to be tough regulations. But anything like this, there are regulations and rules that you have to go through. You know, if you wanted an abortion or the morning after pill, you have to, you know, sign, you have to be sound of mind, you go through all sorts of, you know, speak to a psychiatrist, that sort of thing. And there's a massive difference between somebody who is mentally ill and somebody who is physically ill.
Karen, how long have you got to live?
Well, I've outlived all my prognoses, Andy, so who knows? Yeah, I was given 12 to 18 months about 12 months ago now, so don't really sort of listen to anything like that anymore. But the other thing is as well that probably until you are in the situation that I'm in that people would not think about is that dying is something that I think about every day. And to think that I'm going to die in a lot of pain and see all my children and family see me suffer is like the worst thing possible, really. Whereas, you know, I'd have quite a lot of peace of mind for however long I've got left, you know, thinking that that wasn't what they would see and that I wasn't going to suffer. So the peace of mind thing is a major, major element, I think, that nobody really would think about. You know, if somebody was to say to me, when the end comes, you can have the choice and, you know, die relatively easily and, you know, won't have to go through months of terrible pain and suffering. You know, I won't have that thought now. It won't ruin my day every day.
Have you spoken to your family about this? What's their opinion?
My family absolutely would support me in whatever I wanted to do. You know, I think their fear is to see, you know, me, who has just been a normal, happy, healthy, you know, really fit person all my life. I think their fear is to see me, you know, in a terrible state, basically. That's, you know, surely that's everybody's worst fear, to see their loved ones in a lot of pain and in a terrible state and not being able to do anything about it.
Are you in much pain now, Karen?
No, none at all, Andy. None at all, thankfully. You know, every day I wake up, I'm so happy that I'm still here. You know, I've got another course of chemo to go through in the next few months, but, you know, we'll get through that. You know, I don't look very far forward anymore, but, you know, every day's a blessing, and, yeah, that's how I think of it. But the end does, you know, weigh on me, for sure.
Can you cast your mind back to before there was a diagnosis? Was this something you ever thought about?
No, not really. I don't think that would be the normal thing, that you'd spend your days thinking about how you were going to die.
Yeah.
You know, so no, not really. I've got elderly parents, you know, so I sort of almost thought about it in, you know, their context, that I've seen them obviously degenerate and, you know, lose their quality of life, really. But that's sort of a different thing, really. You know, it's almost like that's a natural way to die when you get older, I suppose, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in, you know, I think that, you know, I'm pretty sure my mum doesn't think every day about dying in terrible pain and things like that, you know, whereas I think somebody with something like a cancer diagnosis probably would.
Karen, everybody's going to wish you well. I certainly wish you well. And let's hope you continue to defy the odds.
Indeed. So do I. Thank you very much, Andy. Thank you.
Good to hear from you, Karen. We really appreciate it.
We are ready to go at B&B Furniture with a wide range of manager specials throughout the store. If it says I'm ready to go, then it is ready to go. Priced in-store for immediate delivery and no long wait for stock to arrive onto the island. Get the furniture you're longing for with no wait, no deposit required and 0% finance available when you get ready to go at B&B Furniture. It's all here under one roof at the B&B Furniture, three-story showroom in Snugborough. B&B
Furniture. Customer satisfaction and quality have been a priority at Milcreast's for over 60 years. We're proud to represent the great car manufacturers, Jaguar, Land Rover, Vauxhall, Mitsubishi, Subaru and Isuzu, and have taken time to build up the trust and respect of both car makers and drivers. 100% independent and Manx-owned for new and approved used cars, leasing, servicing, parts and superb customer service. Milcreast's. It's what's behind us that keeps us in front.
Go faster for less with Manx Telecom. Upgrade to our first-class fibre and you can save over £200. For a limited time only, you can sign up to a 30 megabit plan and get 100 megabits. Or pay for 100 and get 200. Forget economy class internet and experience the luxury of first class fibre. See mt.im/fibre for details, terms and conditions.
I find it hard to get a doctor's blood test appointment to fit around work.
With my mobility issues, it's difficult to get to a hospital for a blood test.
If you find it inconvenient to go for a blood test, or you need one fast, then contact Top Care Nursing, where a nurse will do your blood test at home or in your workplace. Proud to be an Isle of Man Award for Excellence winner. Just call 628 919 for a free consultation or book online at topcarenursing.im.
The Manx Gaelic, Chinian Amera, the mother tongue of Alan Vanin, the Isle of Man. You can catch up with more of Manx Radio's Manx language programmes in the weekly podcast, Abershen Rish. Say that again.
Abershen Rish.
Shene, that's the one.
This is the Isle of Man talking, the man in line.
It's a quarter to one. Isle of Death isn't a very good look for future tourism, says Kevin on 246. Well done to the TT contractors. The larger chevrons along the pavements at the quarter bridge have now been repainted, says Steve. Good job. Manx Care, says G on 313. Manx Care can't manage their budgets. Can you imagine them running the budget for a sister dying? I recall Mrs. Beecroft once approved £1 million drug to save somebody. That won't happen in the future if money can be saved on medicines by offering assisted death. Thank you, G. May or may not be the case, but that's your opinion. Bonzo's on now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hi there, yes. And may I just echo what you said at the end of your phone call with Karen. You know, obviously we all wish her all the very best and long may she continue to beat the odds. Is it a blue moon today?
Why?
Well, because I agree with Julian on something. So, these are rare occurrences, you know, hang out the flags. But Julian, you know, is right, I think, to highlight the fact that these things are being done on the Isle of Man and on Jersey as very much a pilot to see how it will go and to see all the problems in trying to actually put it on the statute book and then implement it in the first place. For England and Wales, not so much for Scotland, of course, because their legal system is more different. Ours, of course, and Jersey's is a bit different, but not sufficiently different as to not be able to, you know, map that over to England and Wales. Unlike, of course, Europe, because in Europe the whole basis of the law is entirely different. But you can only do what the law says. In Europe, anything else is against the law. Whereas here, you can do anything you like so long as it isn't against the law. Here. Yeah. So you know, it's you know, it's a whole different ball game. So you then get to the principles of it. I don't think anyone who's heard all the very moving testimonies that we've heard. Both on Man in Line and in other areas, that we don't, you know, you can't disagree, I think, with the principle that in a, you know, some extreme circumstances, people should be allowed the option of, you know, assisted dying, you know, of control over their own death. Now, I don't think you can contest that. The problem is when you start to try and do it. And as I said before, it is a, you know, legislatively, it is the most difficult thing you can do. And I think Tinwald started to find that out yesterday, that it was a much bigger thing than they thought, perhaps, you know, looking at it in the first place. I mean, just going on to one thing about actually who is going to do it. Now, of course, in all the bill, etc., it states that people who are going to be concerned with enabling assisted dying will be health professionals who will be registered as health professionals and qualified, etc., under the guise of their professional body. Yeah? Now, okay. So, as I think you've mentioned elsewhere, of course, professional bodies have their own regulatory standards, and those standards emanate mostly from the Hippocratic Oath, and it do no harm. So a member of that body would say, well, if I do this, even though the law in the Isle of Man says I can do this, and I've signed off the bits of paper that say that I can do this under the law of the Isle of Man, will my regulatory body strike me off? And the answer, of course, would be yes. So a choice before your between your profession and, you know, the ethics of perhaps giving someone a controlled death, the living and the registration probably win out. And I don't think that the BMA or anybody else is going to go around giving their members, you know, an opt-out. Now, if you're in the Isle of Man and if you're registered under the Assisted Dying Act to do assisted dying, then it's okay for you to do it on the Isle of Man. I don't think that one's going to fly. So that's a huge, big stumbling block. And the BMA, of course, are not, in particular, are not very well disposed to the Isle of Man after Ranson. So actually talking them through to a point where they would give... people registered under BMA, or indeed then, you know, nursing bodies and other people, to give them an exception. No, that's profoundly difficult. And that's before you get into all the things about people being coerced and pressure and elder and vulnerable person with financial abuse and all sorts of other stuff.
Okay.
I mean, abortion reform was a walk in the park on a very sunny day with ice cream compared to this.
Appreciate that, Bonzo. Thanks for calling.
Okay, then, cheers. Bye.
Good to hear from you. On a different subject, try this one about local retail on the Isle of Man, says Fran. I've just been out to get some flowers for an elderly relative, as they're a tad unwell, and I wanted a balloon for a pal's youngster's birthday. Both florists were closed, as I intended to shop local. No flowers in any supermarket, no balloons anywhere. The next time I hear crying about retail on the Isle of Man and lack of trade, I'll spit tin tacks. Try opening up the doors, says Fran. And by the way, why didn't you read my text about the Manx Development Corporation and the steam packet when Dr. Allinson was in the studio on Monday? Thank you, Fran. We ran out of time. Can't read everybody's, but everybody's does get read. Unfortunately, time is of the essence on the programme.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
I wanted to leave you on a positive note. We are talking about, and I've been talking about his sister dying, but I wanted to talk to you about Aidan. Aidan Cleave, a little boy from Castletown, who's been on a mission to raise money to attend the 2024 British Transplant Games. It's going to be held in Nottingham later this summer, the 1st to the 4th of August. Three-year-old Aidan Cleave has been walking for 3 hours. Doesn't sound much to you and me, but it represents how long he spent on dialysis every Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday before he had a transplant. Listen to Aidan's mum, Shirley.
Aidan really did have it tough. Just before he had his kidney donated, he was under palliative care. He'd been into theatre 19 times, 25 times admitted into Alder Hey, 2 admissions into PICU. He had 3 times peritonitis, 3 times COVID, 3 times sepsis, and twice and there were flooded lungs. So, and that was only 12 months, and he'd had, you know, much more before that. It really was the end of line for Aidan. He wasn't well at all. That the life that we had was, we were told that he would be unlikely to receive a kidney donation. And he did, thankfully he did, as I said, from an unknown hero, a deceased donor, we received a kidney. And we're just now making the most off that kidney, giving Aidan the best chance really to look after it. Anyone with kidney disease will know that obviously exercise, you can sweat toxins out your kidneys. So exercise really is going to be really important for Aidan as he goes through life. So being invited to represent Alder Hey kidney team in the Transplant Games this year in Nottingham is an absolute fantastic opportunity to introduce Aidan into sports. So our 3-hour walk recently to raise funds for the Transplant Games, the 3 hours represents the 3 hours Aidan would have spent on a dialysis machine, and the walk represents, obviously, it's a sport, but also before transplant Aidan didn't walk, he didn't have the time to stand up, and certainly didn't have the energy to stand up either. So that's why we've been walking for 3 hours to raise money for the Transplant Games.
Well, I'm not drawing any parallels, I just wanted some good news, and we congratulate Aidan Cleave and Mum Shirley and the entire family. What a story that is. So well done to that little boy from Castletown on a mission now. Anne dropped a note in on 090. I agree with Dr. Allinson. I support her sister dying, but you should have lived here for 5 years, not just registered with a bank account. No matter what an individual's opinion, this is that individual's choice. Thank you for that, Anne. Good to hear from you. Tomorrow, going to be live at King William's College with the students, listening to their take on the world. Perhaps they'll even talk about her sister dying. Why is it, what is it about the rest of the world think that an Isle of Man stands on a compassionate cause? We're overthinking the real issue. We'll have one of people comparing it to other states to prove nothing. Just my opinion, says Simon. Right, we're at Africa Court next with Kelly Zai, thanks to Chris Work on the phones today.
W-I-N-T.
60 years serving you as the nation's station. This is Manx Radio.
Kelly's Eye, brought to you by Ellis Brown Architects.
Peter, what's Kelly's eye looking at today?
Today, David, something I've not seen before. It's a three legs of man. Well, I've seen plenty of those, but I've not seen this one. It's on what I presume is a concrete plaque, which is now getting splattered with rain. And that's set on a small gablet, which has two plastic windows beneath it, and above it a finial made out of wood, which is, again, sort of stylized and not a reproduction Victorian turned wood. And that is on a pair of cottages, really, mews cottages. And then all the upstairs windows are dormers.
And then if we turn around, there are more dwellings.
Yeah, we're surrounded by them. Terraces, three-storey and two-storey mixed. Well, it's not really a detached one in the corner because it's got two garages alongside which link into the next one.
Yeah.
It's called Africa Court.
I mean, it's, I suppose, quite cute might be the word, or cool would be the word the kids would use today.
Well, they probably would. I'd just call it an enclave.
Right.
That would fool them. Well, it takes its name Africa Court because it's in behind Africa House. Africa House is on Woodburn Road in Douglas. It was originally called Woodside. Part of it was sold off and they built the Mormon church on it. But a lot earlier than that, another piece was sold off and the Isle of Man Road Services had it, and they sort of kept dead buses in it, really, ones that they kept so they could strip bits off. Then Trevor Baines of Africa House bought it and turned it into, well, very much an extension to his... I'll call it a wildlife garden, really. Mm-hmm. It had a large pool, pond in it, and lots of planting. And then a couple of years ago, it was bought by McCards and they built this enclave.
Now, there are quite a number of places around the town now where buildings, apartments and flats and so on are tucked away out of sight like this, aren't they?
Yeah, in the past it would have been refused for being backland development. But now in behind the Esplanade on the promenade, we must go down there sometime, yeah. In Esplanade Lane, where Jeff Duke had a garage and, you know, there was a butcher's shop, and now suddenly there's swish apartments.
Yeah.
So Douglas is changing.
Many of the most iconic buildings around the island have been designed by Ellis Brown Architects. Keep up with Ellis Brown today on Facebook or via ellisbrown.im.
Part of island life for 60 years. This is your Manx Radio.